Back again. Here I am, host Ryan Meadows of Free Basketball, talking about the South and the Midwest brackets. Last episode, you just talked about the East and the West. So let's get right into it in the South. Houston versus Longwood, 1-16. Love the name, but they can't actually pull it out. Pause. Houston's going to beat Longwood. Pause. 8-9, Nebraska, Texas A&M. This one's weird for me because if you look at the gambling lines, this is an even game. Either team can win this. Texas A&M can absolutely pound the offensive glass, which is a team that you kind of want to look at least winning a game in March Madness. Can you create extra possessions? But they're like the worst perimeter shooting team in the NCAA. Nebraska, however, is a good defense and can get really hot from three. And I know Nebraska never wins anything in the NCAA tournament, but I'm going to give them this one. Sorry. So I have Nebraska beating Texas A&M in the 8-9, which gets us to the 5-12. Wisconsin, James Madison. Look, you know from the upsets, picking upsets episode, I love James Madison. Do I think they can actually beat Wisconsin? You betcha. I'm picking James Madison. Wisconsin does play a slower, more deliberate style. AJ Storr has really kind of come on for his team. He's starting to shoot like 20 to 30 times a game, which I think helped them because it's like, okay, now we have a clear alpha that we know he's going to get the shots. They do have a pair of big men who, you know, Wisconsin, all the betting markets, Wisconsin's going to win this. This is just a personal thing for me. I'm just taking James Madison. I think they're awesome. You win 30 plus games, I'm going to take you at least one round. So James Madison gets it for me. Duke and Vermont in the 4-13. Vermont is kind of interesting, but ultimately I don't think they have enough to beat Duke. I mean, Duke is not a great team to me. The thing I like least about Duke is their guards, and I don't love Filipowski either, but this is kind of a perfect game for him against Vermont, just oversized, overmatched people. But I think Vermont and Duke, the guards are going to be a little more equal than people would actually suspect and then be like, okay, maybe we have a problem going forward with Duke. Maybe I shouldn't have picked him to the Final Four. So I'm picking Duke, but I think it could be a little eye-opening. So we'll see. But they're at least going to win one, and we'll see if they win two here in a second. 6-11, Texas Tech versus red-hot NC State, NC State, you know, has probably America's player right now in the big guy, and I'm just completely blanking on his name right now. Sorry. But NC State is red hot. They won five games in a row to win the ACC tournament. They go up against Texas Tech, who's starting to find its form again. I should have looked up if the big man had their center had come back, which center is a relative term for Texas Tech because – you know, it's kind of interesting about the Big 12 in general is that you usually associate them with, like, bigger players, size, speed, blah, blah, blah. But a lot of these teams in the Big 12 are kind of undersized. They were running, you know, a 6'8 center, 6'9 center, quote, unquote. Now, most of them are just super athletic freaks, and they play really good defense. So NC State, I think, can actually overwhelm Texas Tech a little bit like they did to all the ACC tournaments and or ACC teams in the tournament with just their rebounding and getting on the boards. This game is ugly. Texas Tech certainly has the better offense. I'm going to take NC State because of the possessions that they can turn over by hitting the glass. And the kid's name is DJ Burns. That's America's player right now is DJ Burns. So it's a great story. I'll have him at least win one. Get to 3-14 matchup, Kentucky-Oakland. Look, Kentucky's going to win this. Oakland absolutely has a shot to win this. And I get it. Oh, they have two guys that are projected to be top five of the NBA lottery. Yeah, okay. They're small guards. Nobody plays defense on this team. The one guy that does play defense on this team is their center, who can't do anything offensively and has been playing off the bench. Kentucky's not going to win anything anymore. Because Coach Cal has kind of lost the plot. Like, Calipari just does things that doesn't make sense. He continues to start DJ Wagner, who is not very good. And he keeps bringing Reed Shepard and Rob Dillingham off the bench. Rob Dillingham, I understand, because he's a wild card. You probably don't want him starting for your team. The Reed Sheppard one doesn't make sense to me why he doesn't start over DJ Wagner. It must have just been a recruiting promise thing because Kentucky is actively worse in the starting lineup with DJ Wagner over Reed Sheppard. So I don't know what it is. It's like Mark Few, when Gonzaga had Chet and the mustache guy. Can't remember his name. For someone that was supposed to be so good in college basketball, I can't even think of his name. That's how forgettable he was. But Gonzaga was better with Chet playing the five and not playing that guy at all. But Mark Few refused to do that. He kept playing them both together at the four and the five. And look, I know they made it pretty far, if I remember right. I don't think they made the championship with that team. They made it far, but it ultimately kept them from winning because he just would not feature his best player in the best lineups. And that's what Calipari does now. He just does not feature his best players in the best lineups. So I don't know why that is. Some sort of recruiting thing or some sort of promise thing. I have no idea. There's no way that he's that dumb or that staff is that dumb that they don't notice it. So it's got to be something else. But it's not going to affect them here. Oakland can score points, though, if they get hot. But they probably can't score quite enough more than Kentucky to actually pull this off. The 7-10, which the 10 is the play-in between Boise State, Colorado. I have Colorado winning that. Florida lost their big man, one of their big men, hand glotten or whatever, like a devastating leg injury. Looked like he shattered it completely. It was nasty. I like Colorado to beat Boise State. Colorado, Florida is a really interesting matchup. I like Florida in the game. Colorado does have three future NBA players on the team. KJ Simpson is awesome. Great matchup between him and Pullen from Florida. I like Tristan Da Silva, kind of a versatile, do-it-all, Swiss Army knife wing. That's a great matchup between him and like Riley Kugel from Florida. And then, of course, you've got the top or was projected top five pick. I think it's top seven, top eight now. And Cody Williams, the brother of Jalen Williams, who plays for Oklahoma City Thunder, which that was a little confusing to me. I haven't really seen a lot from Cody Williams or like, oh, yeah, that's the number one player in college basketball that I would take. So I don't know how much of that a projection from his brother, but, it's still an interesting matchup overall. And then the matchup of the bigs, both teams have good big men. So to me, this kind of comes down to the battle of the boards, and Florida just excels on that end. But Walter Clayton Jr. is kind of a guy for Florida who can get hot from three, doesn't really take great shots, but he's just awful on defense. So if Colorado can do this, it's because Walter Clayton Jr. just kills them defensively. But I have Florida winning this one. So it gets us to 215 Marquette, Western Kentucky. I know all the questions surrounding Tyler Colic. Western Kentucky, I really like the coach from Western Kentucky. He was the previous coach at Texas A&M Corpus Christi, I believe. Really defensive guy. His teams usually have a lot of pace. So if I had to guess, Western Kentucky is going to get up and down with Marquette, which Marquette will more than be happy to do that. They just don't have the horses really for Western Kentucky, I think, to knock this team off. But Marquette, they can be caught a little bit. They're not a big team. They're not going to overpower anybody. I think this game could be closer than people expect. I know we've had some 15-2 upsets the past couple of years that are like, whoa, what happened? Western Kentucky definitely has the coach that I would trust to pull off an upset like this. I just don't think ultimately that they're going to be able to. So Marquette will advance. So we got Houston, Nebraska. In the second round, I want to take Nebraska. I can't do it. Houston's defense is too good. I think they'll get healthier as they go. So Houston advances. James Madison versus Duke. Love James Madison. I think Duke's going to keep going. So Duke makes the Sweet 16. NC State versus Kentucky. This one is super interesting. I think this game is back and forth the whole way. But I think Kentucky actually ultimately gets at the end. If you watch those NC State teams, like, they were trying to give games away at the end. Like they should have lost against Virginia. And it was kind of a giveaway. Okay, they weren't, it wasn't a giveaway. They actually did, I think it was close most of the game, but I think they did come back in the final 2 minutes. But Like in all the other games in their leading, especially North Carolina, they were dying to roll over. North Carolina just couldn't make anything. They were getting every look that you could possibly want to come back on a team. They just couldn't actually do it. So Kentucky, I think, is a team that could actually do it. So I have Kentucky making the Sweet 16. Florida Marquette, I want to say Florida because they can just overpower them in the posts. But their big man, I can't remember his name right now. He played for Seton Hall for 3 or 4 years. So he's played with Marquette team a lot and never really had success. So he's not kind of the elite size that would bother Marquette. Like Marquette is typically bothered by, UConn and Clemson just because of he's 7'1", 7'2". The Florida Bigs don't have that elite size. So I think Marquette is going to feel more comfortable. I have Marquette advancing to the Sweet 16. I know, feels really chalky, and it is, but I think a lot of this tournament is going to be chalky. It just is what it is. The Sweet 16, Houston Duke, this is where it ends for Duke. I have Houston beating them, but you never know. Like if Houston just shoots poorly, Duke will be in the game. The problem is Houston is going to absolutely shut down Duke's guards. They will not be able to create or do anything. So Houston, we know, likes to take away the paint. So the only kind of thing you're hoping for is just like Houston bigs, Roberts and Francis, I believe, get in foul trouble against Filipowski. They're not going to guard Mark Mitchell. Like, I know he had a nice game the other day shooting threes and stuff like that, but you expecting Mark Mitchell to go 8 for 10, 9 for 9 every game tournament? It's just not going to happen, especially against this defensive juggernaut. So Houston gets to the Elite Eight. Kentucky versus Marquette in a great matchup of guards. I want to say Marquette. If I know for sure that Tyler Kolek is there, I'm taking Marquette because Kentucky cannot play defense. Like they're just not going to be able to get the stops to beat this Marquette team. If Marquette doesn't have Kolek, I'm going Kentucky. I'm going under assumption that Kolek will be okay by this time because Sweet 16 should be, a week from now, or a week and a half from now, 10 days from now, whatever it is. I know it's an oblique injury. That can take a while. He's been out for a couple weeks. I think he's going to give it a go if they can get past here and get to the Sweet 16. So I'm going Marquette, setting up Houston Marquette in that Elite Eight matchup. Great matchup. But I'm going with the guards. I'm going with Houston. Houston, the one seed, makes the final four here. So that gets us to the Midwest bracket, which is the one seed Purdue versus the 16 playing seed Montana State Grambling. Got Grambling in that one. Purdue is going to destroy whoever the 16 seed is. They are not going to repeat of last year. The 8-9 Utah State TCU, I just don't like TCU. I mean, I don't like Utah State at all. Give me TCU to pull the quote-unquote 9-8 upset. Look, both of these teams aren't very good, right? But TCU, I think, is just going to be a little bit better. Have been here before and will actually execute, which is weird to say because Utah State was like the number one team in the regular season for the Mountain West, and they're down here at an 8 seed. So seeded pretty low for what a lot they got six teams in the tournament. That kind of tells me it's just a weaker conference in general. They just kind of beat up on each other and they were all ranked higher in the quote unquote net. So they just kind of took advantage of beating each other, didn't really beat anybody in the not preseason, but non-conference is what I'm trying to say. So give me TCU 5-12, sexy pick here, Gonzaga, McNeese. McNeese has dominated their conference, dominated their tournament. People forget that they're coached by Will Wade. And people are like, oh, get Will Wade, blah, blah, blah. Will Wade, like, always falls on his face in the tournament with much better talent than this. So now you're expecting McNeese, who is coached by a guy who's a one-trick pony, who, to his credit, can get the players in there and dominate. And he dominated that tournament and that league. Are they good enough to beat someone like Gonzaga? Which Gonzaga, like I've said earlier with St. Mary's, these aren't great teams, but is it McNeese actually going to be able to pull it off? The only way they can is if they're just bombing from threes because McNeese is severely undersized compared to Gonzaga. And so maybe you can say, look, they'll stretch Gonzaga out. They'll be able to drive and kick or drive and finish, get EK, the big man for Gonzaga, their highest scorer, I believe, in foul trouble. That's kind of the path for McNeese. And that is 100% possible. I just don't think it's actually going to happen. So I have Gonzaga winning. Kansas 413, the Kansas versus Samford. A lot of people are picking Samford in this one because of the style that they play. Oh, they play buckyball or whatever, quote unquote. Buckyball is not revolutionary. It's been around for 50 years. If you watched Loyola Marymount, or especially if you've seen the 30 for 30 about the guru of Go, watch that 30 for 30. Go find it. It's about Loyola Marymount, and there they called it the system, I believe. Samford's Buckyball is like the Temu version of the system from Loyola Marymount in the late 80s, early 90s. Like they press, quote unquote, the entire game and they trap off the first pass, off the inbounder, and they would get up and down, they shoot quick, they don't want to keep the ball longer than 15 seconds, you know. They want to shoot earlier in the clock. This isn't revolutionary, and it's actually like a mediocre, it's a mid version of what Loyola Marymount was doing. Loyola Marymount was pace, pace, pace all day, all long, and they would score 120 points a game. Samford scoring like 80 to 85. So there's not really a comparison here. Now the thing I think that people are taking Samford over Kansas is the injury factor with Kansas, which 100% is a factor, especially if their top two players are going to be out, Hunter Dickinson and Kevin McCullough. Kevin McCullough obviously more important than Hunter Dickinson. But I think they're going to play. Like McCullough, unless he has a promise from some NBA team that they're looking at him in the draft or they're probably going to take him, which I don't even know if they can communicate that now. Literally, you can communicate anything through the back channel, right? But McCullough wants to be in the NBA. I just doubt seeing him missing the NCAA tournament or a couple games, unless his injury is that bad. Like he just played, came back, played prior to the Big 12 tournament, and they sat out the Big 12 tournament to get ready for this week. So he's shown that he can play. It's just not 100%. So will the extra week and a half, will he be 100%? I don't know. But 85% of McCullough is good enough, certainly, to beat Samford. So give me Kansas. South Carolina, Oregon. Oregon had the really nice run in the Pac-12 tournament, whatever you think about the Pac-12. They win the championship. They actually knock off Arizona. Their big guy Dante, if he gets in foul trouble, they're absolutely done. And what does South Carolina do? They like to beat you through the post with a really impressive freshman in Colin Murray Bowles, I think is his last name. Hopefully it's not Murray Colin Bowles, but I think it's Colin Murray Bowles. So hopefully I didn't screw that up. But you'll know who I'm talking about when you see him in the game. So I think South Carolina just Oregon gets in foul trouble and it's over. But Oregon is always a first round, like you've just got to watch out because they're really well coached. They are always switching defenses, which will confuse South Carolina, who's not, you know, not a great offensive team in general. So if they're just getting confused over and over and over and Oregon keeps switching, that's kind of the way that they can stick in this game. And some guards get hot for Oregon, but I'm going to take South Carolina. The 314 Creighton Akron. Look, Akron had the miracle to even get here. It was a screw up from Kent State to foul when they were up one that got Akron in this tournament in the first place. But they're still like, they're okay, but they're going to lose by 13 to 17 points. That just is what it is with this league. So Creighton's going to advance, even though I have major questions about Creighton. The 7-10 is Texas versus the play-in Virginia Colorado State. And I don't want to watch Virginia Colorado State at all, but if I have to pick somebody, I'm going to take Virginia. Everybody's talking about the total being the lowest, like one of the lowest they've ever seen for quote unquote power conferences, but that's how sucky these teams are. I think the total is like 120 and a half. So 60 to 61 gets you the over. Is it going to get there? It might not, but in these tournament games, you know, teams, if they're down, like this is the last game of the season, they're going to keep fouling, right? So if Colorado State or Virginia is down 8 in the final minute, they're not just going to let it go. and let them kill clock, right? That's the difference between regular season and the playoffs a lot, especially with these totals and these spread lines, which episode coming up with Daniel Greer talking about the spreads and lines that we like. Like, even if teams, even like 15 seeds that are down 18 to 20, they're going to foul in the final 2 minutes. So if you're close on these overs, or you think, oh, it might be a slight under, blah, 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 don't think that anything's going to be a slight under. It's either going to be dead under or it's going to be over because of the late fouls in the tournament. This is their last game of the year. Like, they're going to foul. So I actually would lean to the over 120 and a half because of the late foul scenario if a team gets down by, five or six in the final minute. But the final matchup, first round, 2 seed Tennessee versus St. Peter's. Oh boy. Can St. Peter's do it again? They just don't have the offense this time to do it. Like, they don't have a Doug Edert. Now maybe there'll be a new guy on their team who's like their version of that. St. Peter's absolutely is going to give Tennessee problems defensively. Like, Tennessee is Dalton Knecht. If Dalton Knecht is not doing it, Tennessee's not doing it. St. Peter's is a rugged, tough defensive team. Like, it's basically Tennessee without Dalton Knecht. Like, take Dalton Knecht away from Tennessee and shrink everybody 2 or 3 inches, you have St. Peter's. This is a phenomenal 15-2 matchup. This one is like the dead under. If you're going to take an under 140 and say, oh, it's going to be a slight under, no, it's not going to be a slight under if it's like 130-ish, 135. This is a dead under, because both these teams play really good defense. Both of these teams' offenses can suck. And if Dalton Knecht is not going or is somewhat taken away by St. Peter's, watch out. Just saying. Thumb taking Tennessee. Purdue versus TCU. I think a lot of people are going to take, maybe not in this round, but I think TCU is a very interesting team. Can they actually, or a very interesting team to match up with Purdue? Do they ultimately have the bodies and the shooting to pull it off? I don't think so. So I got Purdue in the Sweet 16. Gonzaga, Kansas. This is just kind of the health thing with Kansas. I think Kansas is just better than Gonzaga. So Kansas, I'm having advanced to Sweet 16. South Carolina, Creighton. This is an interesting matchup because Creighton, I see a lot of people having Creighton repeat going to the Elite Eight. I think they made it to the Elite Eight, yeah, last year, and could have made the Final Four, right? If San Diego State doesn't hit I believe it was a buzzer beater against Creighton. Was it Creighton or FAU? I can't remember which one was a buzzer beater, but this was a super close game. They could have very easily made the Final Four last year. Creighton got a really nice break in their path last year. And I would like Creighton more if they had, is it Ryan Nembhard or is it RJ? I think it's Ryan. Ryan Nembhard from Gonzaga. Their point guard last year for Creighton was Nembhard. I'm just going to say Nembhard. And he transferred this year to Gonzaga, and they replaced him with a guy who played at Utah State for 4 or 5 years, I think, their point guard, in Steven Ashworth. I would like Creighton more if they had Nembhard because Nembhard is more of a threat off the ball and can get into those small spaces, to collapse a defense to kick out to the shooters. Ashworth is not going to do that. He's going to be a set and a movement shooter. So I think that's something that people aren't talking about enough with Creighton. Does Creighton have the offensive explosion to make another repeat trip to the Elite Eight? Absolutely. But I think the point guard play is really going to be evident for them when it gets tight late. And they won't rely on Ashworth. They're going to be relying on Trey Alexander, who's can create but isn't quick. So I think that could be something that hurts Creighton. But I don't think it's going to hurt Creighton here. Creighton advances to a Sweet 16. Tennessee and Texas is a really interesting matchup with Max Asmus. I think already once in Max Asmus' career, he's beaten Tennessee, if I remember right. Or maybe it was Ohio State. I think it was Ohio State. Texas is just too small. Like, Tennessee plays teams that are exactly like them in back-to-back rounds in St. Peter's and Texas. Texas obviously is a higher quality version of St. Peter's. But I'm not going to pick the Texas coach because he's lame, dude. Like, you get that mad about horns down, you can go kick rocks. Tennessee versus Creighton in Sweet 16. So Purdue, Kansas. As much as I want to take Purdue because of the Cinderella run and the story of, hey, we lost in the first round last year to the 16 seed. We're out here for blood. There's only been one other time, a 16 seed has beat a one seed, and the following year, that one seed won the national championship. But if you remember about that one seed, which was Virginia, they got to the Elite Eight and they played a Purdue team with Carson Edwards and were down two with 5 seconds left and hit a miracle runner from their big man who never scores to send it to overtime. Virginia should have lost in the Elite Eight of that run, and they got extremely fortunate. This is where, for me, the Cinderella story actually dies here, or not Cinderella, but the comeback team story dies here. They don't have that magic situation against Kansas. Kansas, yes, unhealthy, beat up, question mark. Will they lose to Samford in first round? They 100% could if their two top guys are injured. Kansas makes the Elite Eight. Creighton versus Tennessee. Tennessee can lock Creighton down. Is Tennessee going to score enough to beat Creighton? That's kind of the question. And it's the Nembhard versus Ashworth question. Are they going to be able to handle the pressure from Tennessee? It's 3-point shooting versus Dalton Knecht, basically. I'm going to go with Creighton just for the variance of 3-point shooting. I don't love it. I don't love either team, but I got to pick somebody, right? So now we have Kansas and Creighton in the Elite Eight here. And I'm going Kansas again. I know this could be a cross off day one. My bracket could be busted day one. I get it. Kansas has the talent. And the little thing I like about Kansas is, everybody's talking about they're not very deep, they're not very deep, they're not very deep. They aren't. That is an actual fact. But what have they been doing the past handful of games while their two stars are out? They've been getting tons and tons of exposure having to play. And I think that is something that really benefits team when you put them back into, obviously if those two guys come back, you put them back into their regular role and they've been used to playing 25 to 30 minutes. Now they only have to execute for 15 to 20. I think that could actually benefit Kansas to where they get a higher quality contribution from their quote unquote weak bench because now they've been exposed to a lot more game time. Now they go back to their more limited role and they can just flourish in that limited role. So could I be completely wrong? Yes. Completely admitted that I could be wrong. I'm rolling the dice on this team, though, because I like the path for them if they can get by. So Kansas makes the Final Four for me, setting up a Big 12 matchup, a rematch again between Houston and Kansas, who I think are split the season series 1-1. Here is the grudge match. And the grudge match is going to Houston. Houston making the NCAA championship. They will face off against Arizona. My pick for the winner of the national championship in Phoenix is Houston. All the questions they have about offense, I get. Could they falter against Nebraska because their offense stinks and Nebraska gets hot? Yep, you bet. Could they lose to someone like Kentucky or Duke if Duke's guards finally show up and actually get hot? Yep, you bet. But the thing I'm going to rely on here is they've been the best defense in the country the entire season. They only faltered the past week or two, and Iowa State kind of overtook them as the quote unquote best defense of the country because of injury. I think Houston is going to get healthier as they go through the tournament if they can survive the first weekend. They get healthy, they survive first weekend, they get healthy. I know they're more of a quote unquote undersized in the guard position team, but this is a team full of dogs. They protect the paint. Their defense is really good. I don't know who they match up. Only Kentucky, really, and Nebraska is the only matchup I see all the way to the final and in the championship that you can say got like stupid hot from three. And that's the reason they beat Houston. So I'm taking Houston to win. Final score will be 79 to 71. Book it. Houston wins the national championship. So that wraps up my brackets. That's all my regions. Let me know what you think. Is it different from yours? Do you like it? Is it too chalk for you? Do you wish there's more upsets? Obviously, I wish there's more upsets. And the March Madness, we know, we know at some point there is going to be someone that you're like, oh, a 10 seed made the Elite Eight? How did that happen? That's kind of been the history of the tournament the past couple of years, with everybody kind of being more on a level plane. So this is more chalk, and I don't love it, but I have to go with my gut on what I'm seeing product-wise. I've watched pretty much all of these teams at least once, most of them a handful of times. So just visually, it just feels more chalk to me than what it, what everyone's expecting it to be. And I can't wait to be wrong because I would rather it be upheaval. I'd rather be able to cross off this bracket in the first weekend and say someone like Oregon makes the Elite Eight, right? Like FAU knocks off UConn. I'll live with that. So hopefully we have a fantastic tournament. Hope you enjoy the first four, which is tonight. Once again, me and Daniel are recording a best bets pod. We're going to give you a lot of bets. I think it's 24 plus or 24 bets total, I think, combined from both of us. So if you like gambling or playing on the lines or futures and stuff like that, you'll want to tune into that. It will be a little shorter episode, just like these are. And we'll give you a lot of plays that we really like in the first round and some futures throughout March Madness. So everybody be staying tuned. That episode will be out probably tomorrow morning. Because we're not gonna make any bets on the first four. So it's just gonna be for the first round of the playoffs. So I'll probably upload this or drop the episode on Wednesday. So be looking out for that. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you guys soon.